I would like to call this meeting to order.
Yes.
And at this time, we have Judge Cody Young from Baldwin County going to do the pledge, and then following Judge Mac McGee from Muhlenberg County to an invocation.
In the flag, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Heavenly Father, we thank you for another opportunity to be here, this group of people. Thank you, Lord, for them and for their efforts and their work that they do in their communities. You bless us, bless our communities, help us, Lord, as we recover from storms. Pray for those, Lord, that's lost lives in the storms, too, Lord. We pray that you be with those families. God, be with us as we go on through this thing. We pray, Father, that you get honor and glory from us, Lord. It's in Christ's name we ask.
Thank you, Judge Young and Judge McGee. This time we need approval of the minutes that are in your packet and have been previously emailed out.
So moved.
Thank you.
Second.
With David.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Please.
Motion carries.
Yes, in favor.
Now we have Alicia Sutton that's going to present our financial report.
Good evening. Everyone should have a copy of your financial statement in your board packet. And for as of June, we should be at 100% because we are at the end of the fiscal year. We will continue to accrue expenses and revenues as we continue our closeout for the fiscal year. But as of right now, we have invoiced or received 76% of our revenue, and we've expended about 83.45% of our expenditures. So all line items are in and actually good on the budget, and we do anticipate after we do our accruals that our revenues will exceed our expenditures, and that'll end us with a strong financial fiscal year.
Any questions?
Not, we'll need a motion to approve.
Make a motion.
Thank you, Judge. Second. And then, all right, thank you. All in favor? Any opposed? All right, motion carries.
I might just add, you probably saw him pop up on the screen, but I appreciate Alicia stepping in for our treasurer, or current treasurer, before we move into to new officers. But it's good to see Mayor Cotton on the screen, and glad to see him in the office and recovering well. A lot of folks have been thinking about you, Mayor.
All right. Moving on to our federal and state reports. Austin Weatherington from Congressman Comer's office.
Snuck in.
Locked in over there?
I did.
Make sure this is you
calling. We're
good.
Well, it's good to join you all again. Just wanted to mention that this is Ann Claire's last PAD meeting, so we have enjoyed having her as our intern this summer. I know Congressman Comer has enjoyed having her in the office. She has done great things, so we appreciate Hopkins County lending her out for us, and appreciate Mayor Cotton for the recommendation on Ann Claire as well. Just wanted to mention some things legislatively. The annual appropriations is coming up. September 30th is when the federal fiscal year ends. So we're the House is working on passing some of their appropriation bills. This week on the floor, they have the Department of Defense appropriations bill. So on the House's version, there's a 3.8% basic pay increase, and then there's a $1.15 billion for the counter drug program that the Kentucky National Guard utilizes as well. And then they passed the military construction VA bill. A few was passed on June 25th. But that included a $2 billion for the military family housing, and then $1.2 billion for guard and reserve facility construction. So got some good news before I walked in here as well, that there's a lot of priorities that the PAD office has had that we've worked with Amy on. So hopefully those will be on the subcommittee this week. So we're looking for a lot of energy and water, a lot of the energy and water priorities, as well as some of our USDA community facilities priorities. We'll hopefully pass the committee, and then we'll be able to get it on the House floor in a couple of weeks. But again, just appreciate all the work you all do. Appreciate the PAD. If we can be helpful in any letters of support, always don't hesitate to reach out to our office. And of course, I appreciate the opportunity to be here. Thank you all.
Austin, before I came in here earlier, I did receive some communications from the Commissioner of Department of Local Government saying that DRA, it looked like it was going to be back in the budget. For those of you all that have utilized DRA for a lot of different funding opportunities, they were zeroed out in the administration's budget. However, we learned this morning that that has been placed, not nearly the level that it was, but seeing that it is back in, at least the draft bill, that makes me feel a little bit better. Okay. And I just want to say thank you to Austin and Morgan and Catherine, Marks, and Jason. They have always been very, very informative and very helpful when it comes to us talking with them about these programs. We've been advocating, especially for the Economic Development Administration, DRA, Community Development Block Grant. So,
And Congressman Comer, you know, understands how important those programs are to your all's community. So, you know, appreciate you saying that, of course. And as we kind of go through this approach process, if there are any programs you all are hearing from associations or different things like that, please flag for us. Just so we can kind of be aware of, you know, what programs you all utilize and what programs are important to you all. Thank you.
Thank you, Austin. Next, we have Greg Meredith with the Governor's Office.
Right here.
He's over here.
Thanks for having me. I'm new to the Kentucky Transportation Cabinet Department of Rural Municipal Aid. I'm a field rep. Of course, Alex is not here today. I think he may be off, taking a week off. He asked that I come down, fortunate enough to be able to represent Muhlenberg County and Fort Scott County in the areas that I cover. I also work a little bit with the City-County Bridge Replacement Program. I think we're going into phase four of that. The first three phases have been allocated completely and successfully at this point. So if you all have been approved for some projects, you should have gotten an agreement letter in the mail for you all to sign. So those programs are going really well. Of course, included in that, and I won't go through it, but you know, the flex funds, the 80-20 bridge funds, and of course just the Plano, you know, municipal and rural aid. So I'm here for any questions you might have. I was once upon a time I was district engineer in Bowling Green for District 3. So not that I know everybody, but I know some people that might be able to help you if you need something. So thanks for having me. Thanks for lunch.
See you.
Thank you. Next, we have Chris Wolfridge with Murray State University.
Thank you very much. And I'll be brief. I wanted to introduce you. I'm excited to introduce you to Ms. Shannon Slade, who is the new director of the Hopkinsville regional campus that we have, as well as the Fort Campbell campus. I just wanted to introduce her and have her say a few words.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Shannon Slade. In January, I took the director's position at Murray State Hopkinsville in Fort Campbell, and we've hit the ground running, becoming more involved chamber members, getting plugged into the community, and most importantly, just getting our programs out there and how we can enrich our professional workforce. So if Murray State Hopkinsville can be of any service to you or your business, if you're interested in tuition assistance programs for your employees to level up, I would love to have those conversations with you, and I would love to speak with you. So thank you for this afternoon.
Next, we have Josh Tubbs with TVA.
Thank you. Thanks, Jason, for allowing us to get up here and talk for a few minutes. Good to see everybody. First of all, thank you, Jason, and all of the staff that you have. What you do makes a huge difference. I've been at the local level in the past for several years, and our ad districts are a real gem in Kentucky, and appreciate you and your board for all the things you do for the communities you touch. So I'm excited to be here today representing the government community relations team at TVA. I've got my teammate Scotty Scholler here in the room. Don't hear any boos yet, so that's good. Now, Scotty and I are kind of going around, as well as our teammate Janice Sublett in Bowling Green. We've gone through kind of a restructuring process. Many of you be happy to hear that Virginia Gray will be coming back to the state of Kentucky as Director of Community and Government Relations. Scotty, myself, and Jana will be teaming up and splitting up some responsibilities throughout our region. Scotty and Jana will be working with a lot of you at the local level. I'm going to be with a handful of counties as well, and then spending a lot of time with the state legislators and our congressional staff. So anyway, here to talk a little bit about that, introduce that concept, but also to go a little bit further as our team plans initiatives for the future. One of the things we'd really like to do is to structure a TVA 101 program for you guys. We're looking at rolling that out this fall, and I think, Jason, we're going to get with you on some potential dates, but because we know that our ad districts are a really good central place for these kinds of events, we'd like to actually do that here at the ad district office. So this will be a very high-level update, if you will, but also just to introduce what TVA is, what we do, how we serve the Valley through economic development, energy, and environment, hitting on our missions. We feel like sometimes we can get far away from a lot of what we do, but also stay very centralized on some of the things we do as well. So we want to just give an overview of that. And we're looking forward to doing that. We're going to do it in the Purchase area as well, and then also in Barron River. So excited to kind of roll that out to you guys today. And again, we'll get with Jason on some dates, and hopefully we can have a lot of you attend. But I will be around, so if anybody has any questions, we'll be here to answer those. So anyway, again, Jason, thank you. Thank you all.
Next, we have Amanda Dutton.
Hi, everyone. I just wanted to give a little plug for a KLC event that is happening here in Hopkinsville in August. So this is going to be KLC's Economic Development Accelerator Program. And essentially, it's a way for local elected officials to get more involved and have more experience in working in the economic development project. So myself, along with several of my colleagues, Carter Hendricks here, Ray Hagerman in Muhlenberg County, Elizabeth Griffith Mudd from Marshall County, and then Brittany Petty, a cabinet for economic development project member, will all be here working with KLC and the elected officials. So I can send the information to Jason to send it out to everybody, but it's a really great training program, and it's been a lot of fun in years past when we've done it. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda. Moving on to our staff reports. First, we have Ms. Amy Froh with Community and Economic Development.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm short, but I'm not quite as short as Amanda. thank you all for being here today. We want to take a few minutes as we prepare for the budget discussion to go through sort of our work plans for the upcoming fiscal year in each of our departments. So the Community and Economic Development Department, the work we do in that department basically touches every community in the region through a wide array of services, whether that be from infrastructure to housing to economic development and resiliency planning. Our success is deeply rooted in collaboration with our local governments, state and federal agencies, and then, of course, you all as members of this board. So this slide really speaks to the scope of work that has been growing within our department. We can continue to see a strong demand for our services and increasing complexity with the projects and types of projects that we're working on throughout the region. As you can see on this slide, we currently have about 310 projects that we are working on for our communities, totaling just under $500 million in funding for those project needs. Over time, we've built a reputation as a trusted partner for project development and project implementation. And again, I think these numbers speak to that. While we've maintained a lean team with 8 full-time and 1 part-time staff members, we do, again, continue to see this number of projects and that complexity of the projects growing. So it requires some creativity on our part as far as staffing goes, strategic prioritization, and then increased collaboration to help keep pace with that. On this slide, you can see sort of how this project number has grown over the last 5 years. We've seen a surge in projects from FY22 from about 100 projects totaling a little over 100 million. Again, to those numbers that we see today with that project number tripling to over 300 and almost $500 million in value. Our current operating budget, again, is just under 1.2 million, funding 8 full-time and 1 part-time staff members. And then the strategic use of this staff helps yield a high return of investment for you all throughout the region. Moving into our focus areas for this upcoming year, economic development, of course, will be one of our top priorities. We do continue to support projects that support industrial site readiness, public infrastructure that supports job creation, and then coordination and strategic planning efforts with these funding sources listed here. We supported DRA and EDA, as well as other funding applications that help you all develop shovel-ready sites, perform due diligence, and access infrastructure upgrades that you all need to attract businesses. We also see a growing alignment with economic development and workforce readiness, and we continue to work with our workforce department to explore opportunities to foster that relationship between economic development and workforce as well. Community development work touches nearly every county and community that we serve, including traditional CDBG programs, as well as downtown revitalization, public facility and recreation projects, and housing rehabilitation and demolition. Our role is comprehensive in these activities, everything from needs assessment to application development, preparation on procurement, environmental review, on through construction monitoring. Currently, we have about 40 open community development projects, each with their own timeline, mix of funding sources, and reporting requirements. As our project implementation continues into the next fiscal year, we do see more of a demand for grant administration services and compliance management with these programs. We want to help our communities be prepared for project readiness, aligning those projects with funding priorities, and then helping you all build those competitive applications. In addition to being implementers, we try to be problem solvers and help you all solve problems, be partners with our local government to craft those budgets, again, to make those project priorities fit within those funding strategies, and then connect the dots between those needs at your community level with those funding opportunities. This continued support helps us to be able to help our smaller communities with those needs without having to, for those smaller communities without having to procure those extra staff time on the local level. We do see ourselves as an extension of your local government staff. Infrastructure investment is foundational to the Community and Economic Development Department, and it continues to be probably one of our highest requests for assistance. We are focused on advancing projects in these areas, including planning, engineer coordination, funding alignment, and administration. And this is done starting with our Water Management Council, which all of these water, sewer, and stormwater improvement projects flow through. We are also seeing a renewed interest in regionalization in our infrastructure, especially in the wake of recent disasters. And we're having several conversations with entities looking at regionalizing those systems, consolidating asset management, and then looking again to that resilience against natural disasters. Our planning activities continue to grow. We do assist local governments with comprehensive plans, zoning work, capital improvement plans, and policy guidance through our Regional Transportation Committee. These services are critical to positioning communities for funding and development and ensuring thoughtful growth that is aligned with your long-term goals. We also serve as the bridge between local plans and regional state priorities, making sure that our voice at the regional level is heard on the state and federal level through our shift prioritization process with our Regional Transportation Committee. An area that is not necessarily new to you all, but is new to our agency, is disaster resiliency planning. In the last several years, we've seen several, unfortunately, devastating weather events that have impacted multiple counties in our region. So we began an initiative a couple of years ago to look at disaster resiliency planning on a regional level. Our disaster resiliency coordinator serves as that bridge between local elected officials and our emergency management directors. She is currently, Jamie is our disaster resiliency coordinator, currently leading the charge with a comprehensive regional training schedule, as well as playing a critical role in the development of the Disaster Leadership Council. And that Disaster Leadership Council fosters collaboration, encourages the sharing of lessons learned pre and post disaster, and enables joint planning efforts throughout the district. We continue to help our counties implement and update the Regional Hazard Mitigation Plan. That next five-year update will be due in 2028, so we are looking at starting this fiscal year, looking for the funding to do that update for that program, making sure that you all maintain compliance and being eligible for those FEMA disaster funds. Also, we are currently implementing our PAD Disaster Resiliency or Emergency Management Drone Program. As I've mentioned before, we were able to secure some funding to provide each of our 9 emergency management offices with drones that are capable of search and rescue operations, as well as other life-saving measures. In our GIS department, mapping is one of our most relied upon services and is the backbone for just about every project that we touch. It's used in grant applications, emergency response planning, economic development, and our infrastructure design. Our GIS team continues to deliver high quality, customized mapping projects to support decision making efforts for cities and counties. This GIS team of 1.5 supports nearly every department in our organization, and they are a great value to you all. One new initiative that we are looking at for FY26 is the launch of our drone services. Chris Miller, our GIS specialist, has received his FAA Part 107 license as a drone pilot. So we will be beginning these services beginning in this fiscal year to provide real-time, high-resolution aerial photography and video, mapping, surveying to support economic development, emergency management planning, or anything else that you all might find needs for is with drone-related services. And then we'll continue to seek out other special funding programs as they become available on a state and federal level. These special funding programs will allow us to pursue innovative or one-time opportunities that align with federal and state priorities as they become initiatives to our legislators and congressional representatives. These efforts often serve as incubators for future large-scale projects, and they allow us to stay flexible, creative, and responsive to your all's needs. So in closing out our FY26 work plan, we at the Community and Economic Development Department, we continue to operate at a high level to assist you all, and we're committed to continuing to serve in our communities with excellence. We thank you all for your support and your partnership in making these possible. before I move on to a couple of other things, do I have any questions about our FY26 work plan? If not, I've got a couple of items in your packet that I would like you to refer to. One is a funding, the current funding opportunities notice, and the other is a flyer regarding our drone and professional services. Should look like this. But this current funding opportunities, it does include some of those special one-time programs that I referred to, specifically with some disaster-related funding through the Delta Regional Authority and the Economic Development Administration. So if you are interested in applying for any of these funds, please get with a member of our CEB team, and we'll help you out with that. The Kentucky Transportation Cabinet is conducting a rural consultation survey to gather feedback on transportation needs in rural Kentucky. The survey is conducted every 5 years and allows residents to share their perspectives on how to improve roads, transit, and safety in their communities. This survey is open until October 1st, so please take the time to complete that survey, share it within your communities, and encourage your citizens to fill that out. If you do need a link to the survey, just let us know and we'll get that out to you. So then lastly, I want to introduce the newest member of our CED team, Ms. Lexi Pendleton. In the back comes to us from Christian County with a background in working in public health education at the Hopkins County Health Department. If you all would please join me in welcoming Lexi to the organization.
Thank you, Amy. We have Jill Collins with Health and Family Services.
Good afternoon. We're going to talk about the Health and Family Services Department and specifically our role as the Area Agency on Aging. So in Kentucky, all 15 area development districts are the designated area agencies on aging, and this is a federal designation which allows us to serve as the area agency on aging in our respective districts. So as an area agency on aging, we create multi-year plans for the development of a comprehensive service delivery system to meet the needs of older adults and individuals with disabilities within our service area. We provide information and we advocate for available services and programs and policies that impact our seniors and those with disabilities within our service area. And through that designation, we coordinate funds from the Older Americans Act, state general funds, and other grant funds, which all support our service delivery system. And I always like to mention that these programs really impact everybody. We're all getting older every day. We're all aging. We're either going to have a parent or a grandparent that may need services, and many of us may become a caregiver at some point in the future, or have someone in your family that needs care. And so we're happy to serve as that portal of care for our communities. This is a little more of a comprehensive listing of our services. And so if you have questions about any of these as I move through, just raise your hand. But our Title III services are those federal services that are funded through the Older Americans Act at the federal level. We also fund and oversee our senior centers and the nutrition services that are provided through those senior centers. We offer health promotion and disease prevention programs. Our state general funded program through home care also offers in-home services. We provide the expanded senior meal program, and through a commitment through the state of Kentucky, any older adult age 60 and over has access to a meal. We are a home community-based waiver provider through the Medicaid waiver programs. We offer both the traditional and the participant-directed services component. Through the Older Americans Act, we're also the National Family Caregiver Program here. We offer the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program. We have the Benefits Counseling Program, which helps individuals navigate Medicare open enrollment I don't know if any of you have had to do that on your own or help a parent or a grandparent with that, but that's a very complicated process, and we're fortunate that we have trained certified benefits counselors in all of our senior centers and out in our counties. We provide legal assistance through a partnership with Kentucky Legal Aid. We serve as the Aging and Disability Resource Center, which is a one-stop call center where individuals can access services that are provided through our agency or be connected with services that are provided through other community partners as well. We also fund and administer the Senior Employment Program through the Department of Labor through Title V, and the Kentucky Caregiver Program, which serves grandparents raising grandchildren. I like to call these next programs specialty contracts just because a couple of them are specific just to our area. And then our MIPA program, over the years, that funding has kind of ebbed and flowed over the years. We've had the program, it's gone away, it came back. And so that program helps individuals with their Medicare Part D premiums. We are part of a national strategy for suicide prevention grant. We're getting ready to start year three of this three-year grant and some research projects that are taking place and a lot of focus on the number of deaths by suicide in our area that are specific to individuals that are over 60. So this has been a very eye-opening project that we've been a part of for the last 3 years, and we're hoping to continue that long after the grant is over by the development of our Suicide Prevention Task Force. The next one is our Veteran Administration project, which is our Veteran-Directed Care Program, and we're going to talk a little bit more specifically about that in a moment. Since 2016, we have been a provider of the Veteran-Directed Care Program through contracts and a veteran care agreement with the VA. And so really over the last 18 months, we have gone through a major expansion of our veteran-directed care program. We were identified as what originally began as one of five super hubs across the nation. We are now one of four super hubs across the nation. We did lose one of the super hubs along the process of the expansion. But currently, through our Veteran Directed Care Program that is administered here at Pennyroyal Area Development District, we are in six states and have partnerships with 11 VA medical centers. Through those partnerships and expansion into those other states, we also subcontract with 19 other area agencies on aging to provide the direct case management and field work directly with those veterans in their homes. And you can see a list of those up here. And so because of this super hub, veterans have access to this program in multiple states that we cover. And we also have a very great thumbprint here in Kentucky as a result of our expansion. Community involvement includes a variety of different ways that we're involved within our communities. We're a major sponsor of the Pennyroyal Senior Games, which promotes healthy aging and active lifestyles. We have three chapters of our Elder Abuse Council, which provides education on how to recognize, report, and the prevention of elder abuse. We have a Mental Health and Aging Coalition. We have multiple avenues of how individuals can access our Alzheimer's support groups, specific to caregivers of individuals that have dementia. We're also a partner with the Alzheimer's Association and the Walk to End Alzheimer's to help fund research to help find a cure for Alzheimer's. We have multiple grandparent support groups for grandparents raising grandchildren. We are in the process of building our suicide prevention task force across the district as part of our national grant. We do outreach and community events in all of our counties, state level, and many times at the national level as well. We also have strong partnerships with AARP in our area. And then as far as partnerships, not only at the state and local level, but also at the regional and national levels, with involvement with US Aging and the Southeastern Association of Area Agencies on Aging. We have subcontracts with providers that are secured through a procurement that happens every 3 years. And so our current provider base for Title III Home Care, Title V, and our SHIP program is Pennyroyal Allied Community Services, and then a partnership with Kentucky Legal Aid for our legal assistance programs through our Title III Older Americans Act. This next slide will show you some of our service projections based on allocations that are provided to us from the Department for Aging and Independent Living. I will point out that on our curbside meals that you can see about halfway down, that's probably going to look a little bit different this year with some new requirements and stipulations for the continuance of curbside meals. But the nutrition program is one of our largest programs. And again, there is the commitment at the state level that any adult age 60 and over has access to a meal. This next slide is specific to our long-term care ombudsman program. We are in a very unique situation in our area in the Pennyroyal in the 9 counties that we serve with 37 facilities. That's a large number of facilities that we cover, and that includes 21 nursing facilities, 8 assisted living facilities, 7 personal care homes, and 1 intermediate care facility for individuals that have intellectual disabilities. That's a total of just over 2,700 beds that our long-term care ombudsman provides support and advocacy to those residents who reside in those facilities. You can see that we do that with the assistance of volunteers as well, and you can see that we have 11 volunteers right now. We're going through another volunteer campaign to recruit volunteers for that program. And then as far as consultations, we do project that we will do just at 1,200 consultations in those facilities for fiscal year 26. Service projections for home care and our expanded senior meal program are listed here. That includes our homemaker program, personal care, assessment by our case management staff that are part of the area development district, case management numbers, you can see those, and then through our expanded senior meal program, you can see the number of meals that are forecasted to be provided in our area this coming year. Additional service projections on this next slide include our home and community-based waiver program, with the participant-directed services clients at 233, our traditional waiver clients at 58, our national family caregiver, 110. Our Title V program slots are at 17, and that number is provided to us by the Department of Labor. Those are assigned. Our veteran-directed care program, which has just gone through a major expansion, will serve 445 clients with expected further expansion after the first of the year. We also expect to serve about 60 clients with the allocations that we have received through our Kentucky Caregiver program that is specific to grandparents raising grandchildren. Within the department, we have 21 full-time staff, 1 part-time staff member, and 5 personal service contracted case managers throughout the district. A local snapshot to give you an idea of just some broad numbers. We will provide services to over 10,000 individuals this next year. Our current total budget for the department is $31.6 million. With much of those dollars coming to us from our veteran-directed care program and our Medicaid waiver program. And we still have a wait list for some of our programs through home care, and those include in-home services such as personal care, homemaking, and as well, we do have a wait list for some of our caregiver services as well. Demographic trends, we watch this closely. Many times our allocations are based on demographics. Kentucky's a rapidly aging state when we look at the number of those individuals age 60 and over. Specifically for Pennyroyal, from the July 23 estimates, age 60 and over population is just over 52,000 individuals that, based on their age, could be eligible for services should the need arise. And with the aging population, obviously that's going to increase our need and demand for physical health and social supports that ensure sound quality of life. We want to be sure that individuals have the opportunity and choices available to them to remain in their own homes and communities for as long as possible. As the designated area agency on aging, our role is to assess community needs, develop and fund programs, educate and provide direct assistance, serve as a portal of care, and to be custodians of public interest to make sure that we're maximizing the use of public dollars and serving as many individuals as possible. I know this next slide may be a little hard to see, but I want to give just a brief summary of what this is. And so those of you that have been on the board for a while, you know that we've gone through a major expansion within the department with a couple of our programs. And so as a result, we've made some changes within our organizational structure within the department. And so we are now going to be called the Department for Health and Family Services. So I'll have a title change as your director's Department for Health and Family Services. And we do have several staff that are going to be taking on some new and additional responsibilities as we move through the expansion and the reorganization of the department. This is just the organizational chart for the Health and Family Services Department. So you can see there are a lot of staff and a lot of roles that we have. And so as we move through this next fiscal year, I'll be providing more updates on what those shifts and duties are going to look like and what those role changes are going to look like. But I think we're just very blessed to have the opportunity to serve as many individuals as we do through this department and have the impact that we do have, not only in our own community, but throughout the state of Kentucky and those five other states as well. I have my contact information on here if anyone needs to contact me. But I also have two new staff that we did not get the chance to introduce in June because we met over at the convention center. But I would like to introduce Tammy Meredith, if Tammy could stand. Tammy is going to be working with us in our caregiver program, and she's going to be working specifically with grandparents raising grandchildren. And she's been with us a little over a month now. So welcome, Tammy. And the next staff member I would like to introduce is Jessica Davis. Jessica will be working with us in our Veteran Directed Care program in a new position that has been created. So we're very glad to have you, Jessica, and welcome. There are just a couple other handouts in your packet that you can kind of look at on your own, but there's a breakdown of the wages by county that are paid out through our Medicaid waiver program. You can see those are broken out by the fiscal year. Total wages that have been paid out to those employees of that program that provide care to the clients is right at $8.5 million. Then I also have a breakout of the service reports for the department for April and May. You can kind of get an idea of our activities and events that have taken place. And then, of course, we always provide you the breakout by county, by service of our waiting list. And so if you have questions on any of that, just feel free to see me after the meeting. So thank you.
Thank you, Jill. Next, we have Ms. Sheila Clark with our workforce.
Good afternoon. Thank you. Make sure I can see it along with you all. In looking at the workforce services, we've gone through many changes over the years, and This is the time that we're at the lower end of budget amounts that we've participated in over the years. And looking at the basic services, the administrative services, and how the pieces are put together, you'll see that the Area Development District is the fiscal agent and the subrecipient. And you'll see that the Purchase Area Development District has our one-stop operator and provides the direct service staff that helps staff our career centers. And so I'm looking at the administrative activities and how all that's brought together. There are 10 workforce boards in the state of Kentucky, and we're one of those 10. And then we have a KWIP, a Kentucky Workforce Innovation Board at the state level that provides guidance and policies to us locally. And looking at the services that we have, we want to mention that the services are for youth, adults, dislocated workers, and then other special populations at times. And we consider this program, if you have a special need for it, it's not good, because that means you've had an emergency of some sort, you've had a major dislocation, you have youth that are troubled with trying and need assistance. And those activities, as well as the unemployment numbers, all help break up and make up our allocation amounts that we receive. To date this year, we do not have our final allocations in place, but we will be working on those as they come. And not the smallest effort by any means is placed with the business outreach and our business service teams that do those activities. And looking at the youth activities, we have 4 contractors for our youth programs. 3 of those are out-of-school programs through our 3 community colleges, and 1 is an in-school program at Christian County Board of Education. We do have an activity called Putting Young Kentuckians to Work that we thank the Kentucky Legislature for giving us those funds to operate that program. And this is our beginning, our second year in that program, and we're putting people to work. Those young adults that are reaching out maybe for their first meaningful job after a job in high school and in the summers, and that's been successful so far. But our regular ongoing activities keeps us going throughout the year, as well as the new opportunity to serve more of our youth that are at risk. In our workforce services, we want to place special emphasis on Fort Campbell. And we do have staff liaison that works at Fort Campbell with the normal activities of day-to-day life as individuals transition from the military into today's workforce. And those opportunities, we work with economic development for some of the activities that they place at the centers. And then we also work with city and counties for special event to try to make that transition focused on some of the counties and cities nearby, rather than them returning to a hometown. We are more commonly thought about lately and some of our emergency grants that we've requested in the area. And if you remember, we had a tornado grant for a period of time, and that grant has expired. We have requested through the state of Kentucky a Kentucky Storms grant to kind of capture everything that's happened in the last year or so and put it in one big grant. And the state of Kentucky requested $10 million. In that grant, and so far they've received $1 million of those dollars. We will have a portion of that million, and hopefully over the 3-year period, we'll be able to draw down a little over $1 million. And this is to help with the storms, the cleanup, the nonprofits, the city and county that might be working on public property to clean up, as well as looking at some other services that we can deliver through those individuals that might be on a layoff large layoffs that we haven't had lately, thank goodness. We don't need that and the storms going on at the same time. But those are some of the activities that we do with the emergency services. And looking at the Career Center activities, we have two comprehensive centers. In the state of Kentucky, there's 14 comprehensive centers, and we do have two of those, Paducah and Hopkinsville. And then we have other affiliate sites as JobNet and Madisonville, and then our work at Fort Campbell, as well as in Mayfield, and looking at those activities being staffed by some of those direct services staff, as well as others. I tried to move through this quickly because I know there's some other speakers today. And in looking at that, the West Kentucky Board has a 42-member board that you as judges appoint. And looking at our activities that we do, we keep you updated by bringing it to you at these monthly meetings. And we have five locations for our career centers and approximately a $4 million budget for that. And looking at that, we're always seeking additional resources. And I think you heard Amy talking about working with the workforce and trying to secure additional dollars where maybe there's other activities we can join together on to try to find solutions to help our cities and counties. We did want to mention that we're trying to put a workforce consortium together, that meeting of the judges that has to have the supermajority. I need 12 of the 17 judges to attend. So we're working on that date. And then our emergency grant information, we'll be bringing that to you as well. Are there any questions? If not, that concludes my report.
Thank you, Sheila. Next, we have Alicia Sutton with an administration update.
So the Finance and Administration Department covers 10 full-time staff and 4 part-time staff. And part of our duties is just covering the day-to-day operations of the agency. That covers anything from payroll to cash receipts to accounts payable to internal controls and then the communications and public relations. We also serve as the fiscal agent for the Pennerall Elder Abuse Council, the Pennerall Solid Waste Management Authority, the Hopkins County Long-Term Recovery Group, and the West Kentucky Coalition. Most of that just includes processing accounts payable and then doing some financial reporting for those councils and agencies. As Jill mentioned earlier, the financial department has also been impacted by the Veterans Directed Care Program. She mentioned we've had some major growth there. We've expanded our services into Indiana and Ohio as we continue to serve Kentucky and Tennessee clients as well. We are currently serving 332 clients. This time last year, we had about 82 clients, and we're now at 332, so that's over a 300% growth. I do want to recognize any staff that has touched that Veterans Directed Care Program, whether that was financial or program related. So if you guys could stand.
Alicia, stand up.
These guys have done a tremendous job in expanding this program and reaching additional areas. And I also want to mention Jackie Miles. She continues to work with us part-time. She was involved in the earlier part of this implementation. And also Ms. Sherry Chambers, who also works at the front desk. She's been very helpful in doing a lot of data entry for us. So I want to recognize the two of those as well. And we are looking at fiscal year 26. We're going to manage right at $13 million. And individualized budgets for the Veterans Directed Care Program. For the Home Community Based Waiver Program, as Jill shown on her slide earlier, where I think she had 233, so we've added one since I did my slide. So we're at 232 clients, and we're managing a little over $11.1 million in individualized budgets for the Home Community Based Waiver Program.
So what is the impact of these financial management services? So I do want to point out that our budgets for individuals average anywhere from $36,000 to $48,000. And a facility-based care is averaging $84,000 plus. So that's about a savings of over $20 million for the areas that we're currently serving. Additional impacts, job creation and local employment in your areas. We're also generating state and local tax revenues that go to your counties and to your communities, and also stimulating the local economy because workers are spending their dollars in your area, either on groceries or fuel or other housing related expenses. For fiscal year 25, this is what we served, and there is a copy of that, these tables in your packet. So for BDC, we were right at $5 million, and for home community-based waiver, we were a little over $8.5 million. So looking at a total of a little over close to $13.5 million that we served in fiscal year 25, and that's looking close to $25 million for fiscal year 26. So the improvements and initiatives that the Finance and Administration Department will be working on for fiscal year 26, due to the growth of the Veterans Directed Care Program, we will be implementing some software for the program and the financial side to help manage these clients. We're upwards in the 440 with those that we have pending right now, and we have data everywhere. If you ask any of the staff, they'll tell you it's hard to locate the data, and so this software is going to collaborate and keep us together and work with the different spokes and medical centers that we operate with. We're also going to try to streamline the benefit enrollment process for the ad staff to make that easier when we onboard individuals. We're going to continue to streamline our electronic processes to reduce manual errors for the staff. And then, as always, we'll continue to strengthen internal controls for audit readiness so we can have excellent audit reviews. If there are any questions, I'll be glad to address those. If not, that concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Alicia. Okay, moving to new business, our monthly code of ethics report. We have no issues to report. Next, we have Mayor Oscar Green for the installation of officers in the halls.
Christy told me earlier she was looking forward to this report. She's tired of sitting up here. But we need to give her a hand. If you got a little extra time, she's got about 2 minutes to do this. You notice as soon as she said my name, she started grinning. And I'll do one other thing. It's not on script. I got a script, but I never follow a script anywhere I go. If you are work for Pat and you hadn't had a chance to stand up, would you stand up, please? Well, obviously nobody works.
We have a shy group.
Got shy, yeah. Not when they're at. The nominating committee met on July the 11th, and the committee voted unanimously for the following individuals to serve as officers for a two-year term beginning July 1, 2025. So we're just a few days behind with that because we had another meeting last month somewhere else. For the next 2 years, Chairman Judge Todd Mansfield from Todd County, Vice Chairman Judge Cody Young from Caldwell County, Secretary Mayor Kevin Cotton, Hopkins County, and Treasurer Lee Wilson from Lyon County. Are there any other nominations from the floor? Sorry.
Yeah, no, sir.
Christy said anybody mentioning her name is going to get shot. Something like that. If not, Madam Chair, I would make this report in the form of a motion for full board action.
All right, we have a motion. Can I get a second? Thank you. Good. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
All right. This time I would ask all those who are elected to office to come forward. You stand over here to my left.